Support comes from the St. Louis Public Library Foundation. During these challenging times, free access to digital resources is a necessity. You can help our community stay connected. Support your St. Louis Public Library at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Have you heard of naltrexone? Perhaps Vivitrol, the brand name of the FDA-approved drug, rings a bell. Well, if neither is familiar to you, you are not alone. Naltrexone is a medication administered in pill or injection form that helps people beat addiction by blocking the effects of opioids and alcohol. St. Louis journalist Ben Westhoff's new documentary, Antagonist, features the perspectives of those who say the relatively unknown drug was critical to their recovery.
I was on Vivitrol 2020, and it saved my life because it took away the cravings, the urges, you know what I mean, the thoughts of it, you know what I mean, and it gave me time to recenter and get to know who I was as an individual, instead of wearing all these masks that I was accustomed of wearing.
The film also explores the role big money interests have played in why people aren't more aware of naltrexone despite its decades-long history and effectiveness. Here to talk with us about that and how Antagonist approaches the story of naltrexone and people whose lives have been changed by it, we welcome Ben Westhoff, journalist, author, and now filmmaker. Ben, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having me, Elaine.
So this is your first film?
That's right, yeah.
And this is not, however, the first time that you've gone deep into a topic that's related to addiction. You wrote a whole book about fentanyl called Fentanyl Inc., which was published in 2019. Why is this issue of addiction, Ben, so important and personal to you?
I had a friend die from fentanyl back in the day when I had no idea what fentanyl even was. And my book explored the supply chain. So Fentanyl Inc. was all about how fentanyl gets from basically legitimate businesses in China to the Mexican cartels to the streets in America. But for this film, I really wanted to dive into the recovery industry because, you know, as corrupt as drug trafficking is, it often seems like the drug treatment industry is almost as corrupt. And so that's really what my film Antagonist gets into.
Now, as it happens, it was a Fentanyl Inc. book talk and book signing that ended up leading to a memorable exchange. Ben, how did that encounter inspire this documentary Antagonist?
You know, when you're on book tour, you kind of think you're a big deal. People are lining up to get your autograph on their books and they want their pictures and everything. And so I was doing a reading in St. Louis and everything was like that until this one guy got to the front of the line and he looked me in the eye and he was like, "You really, when it comes to recovery and treatment, you really have no idea what you're talking about." And so I was like, who is this guy? Like, what? And it turns out it was Percy Menzies who ended up being the subject of this film.
Well, also, and totally on purpose, not merely as it happens, maybe as the situation at that book talk, the inspiration of the film is with us now. Percy Menzies is the president and founder of Assisted Recovery Centers of America, which is right here in St. Louis. Percy, welcome back to the show, to you too.
Thank you for inviting me.
So does Ben's description of your first encounter square with what you remember? And why was it that you went to that book signing?
Very vividly, because I'm very interested in meeting authors who have written either autobiographies or books about addiction. And sadly, most of them fall short because they write something, maybe a family member died, and then they write a book that is just laden with a lot of emotion. But they don't seem to really understand the science of addiction and why this field has remained outside the realm of medicine.
Mm-hmm. Why have you been interested in addiction, and not just as a science, but as as something that you are doing for a living now?
I think in a word, it is fate. I came as an immigrant almost 49 years ago, and I started working for this pharma company that had developed a range of medication from the opium poppy. And every drug company's goal was to develop a non-addicting opioid. So in the quest to develop a non-addicting opioid, they discovered this drug called naloxone or Narcan. And Narcan was so revolutionary that I describe it as a penicillin moment. And it never, because to develop a non-addicting opioid was absolutely revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And then we developed a non-addicting oral drug called naltrexone.
So naltrexone, before we get any further, let's talk about what naltrexone is and what it does. So Ben, coming at it as a journalist, an investigative journalist, what did you find about naltrexone and its similarities or differences in comparison to other addiction recovery drugs that are on the market?
Naltrexone is basically a vaccine for opioids. And so you take this pill, and basically it's like a force field. So you take the pill, and then you could try to shoot up with fentanyl, heroin, pills, any opioid, and it won't affect you at all. So it's, in a way, it's kind of a miracle drug. Scientists were searching for something like this for years and years and years, and they finally found it. There are other addiction medicine for opioids also, and those include methadone, which is a lot better known, and Suboxone, which the drug is called buprenorphine. And those have helped so many people. So many people have had lots of great success with those, but they are addicting opioids in themselves. So some people have described methadone and Suboxone as just as addictive or even more addictive than fentanyl or heroin. So some people don't want to be on that type of treatment. Some people want something that's non-addictive that will help them quit opioids forever. And that's where naltrexone comes in.
Mm-hmm. Percy, how do you explain why, in your view, naltrexone is the best treatment for opioid addiction, especially given what Ben has just talked about?
It is one of the treatments that you have to offer them as an option. Because the biggest problem we face in our field is relapse. They go to residential programs. These patients go to jails or prison. And they come back home to an environment of past drug use. Nothing has changed. All the cues and triggers are right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer you go away from the drugs and alcohol, the stronger the desire to use when you have access to it. So naltrexone was developed as an insurance policy, as a protection when you're coming back home to a cure-rich environment.
Mm. So vaccine and insurance policy.
Yes.
I think those are very useful ways to think about this. Ben, in the interactions that you had with people, and in the film, you are in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco, as well as here in St. Louis. What did you gather from what people told you about what they were looking for or what they wanted out of treatment or in recovery?
Yeah, we traveled to the Tenderloin in San Francisco, which is in many ways kind of ground zero for this epidemic. You know, San Francisco is one of the wealthiest cities in the world, and yet there's this whole neighborhood that's basically, you know, unhoused encampments everywhere, and it's just kind of like almost anarchy in the streets. Talked to a lot of addicted users, and we said, what treatments are available? And we asked if naltrexone was available, and no one had even heard of it. It was not available at all. And in St. Louis, on the other hand, we talked to a ton of people who go to Percy's clinic, which is called ARCA. It's downtown on Olive Street here. And a lot of them were using naltrexone, and over they described it as having saved their lives because they got this vaccine, this force field, and it helped them beat opioids altogether. So really give Percy and his clinic a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you've noted, these stories of people, the film features the story of St. Louisan Brett Rudloff. He's a former drug user who lived in an encampment by the Mississippi River for a while before moving to an industrial site in St. Louis called Earth City, and that's east of the Missouri River near St. Charles. And Ben, you had a chance to go with Brett to visit where he used to camp.
So here's another place that I would set up a tent. Most of the time when it was raining or snowing, this is where I would be at. Yeah, I had a bike. Yep, it's right there.
Oh, that's your old bike.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's still here. It is in the tree because I didn't really want people around seeing that somebody was living over here. I hid it up here so that way it's out of the way. I figured if people came up here or around here at all, they wouldn't really look in the trees and see it.
Now, Brett also shared details of his childhood with you, Ben, including the divorce of his parents, the loss of his mom when he was 4 years old, and his adolescence.
Yeah, so after my aunt took me in, after getting out of DYS, foster care and all that, I started running with the wrong crowd. I stole a car. I drove out to California. I thought I could find like a good life, free life out there, maybe become successful in some kind of way. And I wound up actually just going out there and doing a bunch of drugs and getting caught with that stolen car. And at the age of 17, I went to LA County Jail for that, for the stolen car. After that, I think I got extradited to Missouri for some crimes that I committed out here before I left. They also tried me as an adult and they sent me to prison for almost 3 years. So I only get to see my daughters like once every 6 months. And it really breaks my heart because I would like to be a part of their lives.
We see Brett again at the end of the film, and it's a very different picture. He's sitting in front of a cake with one candle on it. He's surrounded by people who are singing to him, and it's a celebration of his reaching 1 year of sobriety.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow.
Who doesn't nod anymore? This is the first true birthday.
Yes. 1 year.
Now, in that clip, Brett looks so happy and proud. Now, Percy, when you met Brett, he was coming to your clinic to seek help in his recovery. What do you recall of his situation at that time? And why did you feel like he was a good candidate for naltrexone?
Well, when they first come into treatment, we have to offer them a detox. And so we cannot offer them naltrexone as the first line of treatment. But once they are stabilized on drugs like buprenorphine, then we give them a choice. What do you want? And many of them will opt for it. The strength of my clinic is educating our patients on the different medication paths they can take. And that is absent in our field. In our field, they just don't believe in offering them a choice. They say, we only believe in this. What naltrexone debunked the myth that addiction is an incurable disease and you need to be on some substitution medication for the rest of your life. That is completely inaccurate and I think in many ways misleading. Mm-hmm. And we changed that. Once you get naltrexone, you can now have a freedom to go out, work in the field, work wherever you need to without those cues and triggers overwhelming you.
Yeah, and if I can just piggyback on that a little, I mean, I remember hearing that since I was a kid, basically. Like, if you try heroin one time, it's all over. You know, you're going to be addicted for life. Nothing works. I've been hearing this, you know, for years. But it turns out that it's really not true. And I think Vivitrol, naltrexone, Vivitrol is the 30-day shot of naltrexone that really kind of disproves that.
So one of the things about naltrexone is, and we've mentioned this already, it is not only an effective treatment for opioid addiction, but for alcoholism as well. And you have a connection to that in some way, right, Percy? About alcoholism and what that is.
Right, because people were absolutely surprised that there's a common neurochemical pathway between opiates and alcohol. And once that was discovered, naltrexone was a huge step forward, because prior to naltrexone, there was nothing. There was an old drug called antabuse that made you sick if you drank. It never got any traction. Naltrexone should have been the revolutionary drug to treat alcoholism, but of course other issues happened. So now it is, and with naltrexone, for alcoholism, it is very easy to treat them with it, because they don't need to be detoxed of opioid. They don't need to be detoxed of the alcohol. They can start the medication right away.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you wanted to add?
Oh, yeah. And the great thing is you don't have to stop drinking. You know, people don't realize that. Like, you take naltrexone before you go out on the town, and then you can have one drink, you know, maybe two drinks, but then you just don't feel the craving to go hard, to go crazy. That's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the opioid and alcohol addiction drug naltrexone and a new documentary that explores why it's not more widely used or known. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Ben Westhoff, journalist, author, and filmmaker, and Percy Menzies, president and founder of Assisted Recovery Centers of America. We're discussing Antagonist, a new documentary film by Ben, which was inspired by the work Percy's been doing for decades now to raise awareness about naltrexone, an FDA-approved medication that helps people beat opioid and alcohol addiction. Now, before the break, we were talking about notions regarding addiction, what works and what does not for recovery. And I think this gets to medication being just one part of a much bigger picture of recovery. And, you know, regardless of what the medication happens to be, there are non-medication interventions and supports that are necessary, you know, to treat those addictions, but more specifically to care for the people who are struggling with them, right? Percy, talk to us about what those other components are.
By the time the patient comes to us, they are a mess. They have legal issues, medical issues, marital issues, and all those have to be addressed. So a medication is just one component of it, but we have to also help them with housing, with jobs, with the legal issues. Some of them don't even know how to enroll into Medicaid. All those components have to be in place, and that's the strength of ARCA. That when they come to us, it's not just a unidirectional, just a, you know, one medication and you can go. We help, we treat them more holistically.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we've been talking about in, you know, promoting what this conversation is going to be pertains to big money. And so there's a whole, you know, recovery industry, which you had mentioned, Ben, earlier. But what about the medication and the money and big money interests is really important to think about more carefully?
Well, unfortunately for naltrexone, there's just not a lot of money to be made in it. It's a generic, you know, the daily pill. The Vivitrol shot is more expensive, but it lasts a month, so it's not someone coming in every day. And by the way, for patients at ARCA, it's free, though. It's subsidized by the state and the federal government, I believe. But from the perspective of Big Pharma, there's just not a lot of money to be made in this product. Whereas with something like methadone, it's kind of the perfect drug from a profitability standpoint. Right. So you have to come in to take your methadone every single day. And so that's why in front of methadone clinics, you might see people lining up 6 a.m. in the morning for their dosing. And so because of the arcane laws, because of this lobbying organization behind methadone, a regular doctor can't just prescribe it. Right. You have to go. There's no other medicine where you have to go to this specialized clinic, and it makes it so hard. It could be snowing. It could be super hot. you know, you have to go, you might want to go on vacation, you might have to work. You can't do those things because you have to stand in line for your methadone. But from a profitability standpoint, it's really just a perfect drug. And that's why the methadone lobby has so much money and has really worked to make sure naltrexone is not part of the equation. So these clinics, they could offer naltrexone, but they don't. And part of my film is trying to figure out why. And I did some investigation and found that the profit motive really is at the center of things.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things, and thank you for hitting that point on the head in that way. You know, Percy, you started Assisted Recovery Centers of America as your family business, along with your wife. Where is there that profit motive sort of missing for you? What have you brought into the clinics that you are running that is missing from places, you know, that do offer the methadone or lean to other medications to help people in recovery?
It's an axiom of medicine that you use addicting drugs very cautiously, because I always joke saying that addicting drugs are like pornography. It sells very fast. So when you're offering an addicting drug, you don't have to do much work. People will line up at your clinic. And that's where the corruption starts. So to use a drug like naltrexone, it takes quite a bit of work and educating the people why we use it. You know, but by offering them clear guidelines and not having, and we focus on the patient, not on the medication. And I've been pleading of methadone clinics, why don't you offer all medications that are approved by the FDA, buprenorphine, naltrexone? And usually the answer is we are not interested.
And do you have any insight into why that interest is not there?
Well, it's a long story, but obviously it is very easy to dose somebody on methadone. When it comes to buprenorphine or naltrexone, there are a lot of steps to be involved with it. So they are looking for numbers and speed, and we are looking for fewer people and outcomes. Because methadone is based on this unproven theory that you have to take it for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the rub comes.
Peer support is something we've talked about on this show, and that is also a part of how your clinics work, right? Talk with us about that.
Yeah, peer support are really, that's a secret sauce of recovery. At my clinic, we are close to 20 peers who have been working for us. Brett is a good example. After he did well, I said, come and work for me. And they have such a passion to help people because they have recovered, they've got their life back. Now they want to inspire and help others. And any number of them, you will see the same degree of compassion and passion that they help others. And that becomes very infective over a period of time.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that also has come up, Ben, when you talk with our producer about peer support, that another feature of what happens is that addiction specialists are not necessarily flexible in how they are understanding how to help other people who are in recovery, and that a one-size-fits-all approach is sometimes more common than it could be.
Yeah, I mean, people have complicated lives, and so when someone walks into a treatment center, they need help right away. They don't need to be given a phone number for someone to call or told to come back another day. They need to get treatment. They need all the types of support that Percy has been talking about, holistic support. And that has to do with helping with housing, with job applications, job training, counseling, and, you know, the whole gamut of dealing with the bureaucracy. You know, people don't realize just getting a driver's license is a big issue for a lot of people living on the streets. And so that's what is so great about ARCA. And that's the problem with so many of these kind of one size fits all sort of programs that are more common.
And, you know, another important component is providing psychiatric services, because many of them have pre-existing psychiatric symptoms. And if you don't treat both symptoms at the same time, you might lose the patient.
Mm-hmm. What is the biggest takeaway, I mean, especially given that there has been a decline in overdose deaths with the use of, with Narcan, what is it that we still need to be paying attention to, Ben?
Well, there's a big study that came out recently that suggested that because China is starting to control these fentanyl precursors, that led directly to a big drop in overdose deaths in the U.S. And, you know, that was exciting for me because that's kind of the focus of my book, Fentanyl Inc., and the lobbying work I've been doing, talking with government officials, culminating with Trump meeting with President Xi and, you know, making a lot of progress on this issue. The Narcan has undoubtedly saved, you know, millions of lives. I'm sure that's not an exaggeration. And treatment options have been getting better. The money that's gone to clinics like ARCA from the state and federal levels. And I think we just cannot take our foot off the gas, though, because these, historically, the overdose death rate is still incredibly high compared to any other era in our history. And the numbers could start swinging the other way at any time, really.
Mm-hmm. And in our last minute or so, Percy, what is your hope for this film, Antagonist? How would you like to see it further the work that you have been doing?
Assuring the people that addiction is a very treatable illness and you can be cured. You know, we have said this over and over, it's an incurable disease, and I want to debunk that. If these medications are used appropriately, you can lead a very normal, healthy, wholesome life.
Mm-hmm. Percy Menzies is the president and founder of Assisted Recovery Centers of America, and Ben Westhoff is the St. Louis-based journalist, author, and filmmaker behind the documentary Antagonist. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Elaine.
Thank you.
You can access Antagonist by becoming a Patreon member at antagonistfilm.com.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.